Did you know that 90% of child sexual abuse is by someone a child knows and trusts? Because of their personal and trusted nature, faith-based groups are in a unique position to educate and empower communities to prevent abuse. They can incorporate training into their organizational policies and encourage all of their employees, volunteers, and community members to participate in prevention. Welcome to Parenting Today. I'm Sonia Quiñones, Executive Director of SCAN of Northern Virginia. And my guest today is the Reverend Tricia Manarin, a pastor with McLean Baptist Church and a member of SCAN's own Public Education Committee. Today, we'll discuss the important role that faith-based communities can and often do play in our community in supporting parents and protecting children. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So tell me in your own words why you think faith congregations are important sources of support for parents and their families.
The faith community is often a community that's already known to a parent before they even become a parent. And in that, we hope that there's a safety net. Of course, your statistics just showed that these things happen with children, with people who the children know. But I believe because that community is already known, there's a safety net, plus there's a welcoming spirit that can allow for honest conversation with those who've already gone through some of the issues as of parents.
That's a great point. And in the sort of transience of our society today, oftentimes the role that extended family would have played in supporting and mentoring new parents, those extended family may be sort of geographically very distant now. And sometimes faith communities can form that sort of role of informal support.
Right? Definitely. So that children have aunts and uncles and grandparents that they may not have physically nearby from biology or adoption, but a new sort of adoption that can also aid the parents in parenting, even if it's just a break for parents to have because Auntie so-and-so or Mr. and Mrs. so-and-so are taking the children for a couple of hours.
Absolutely. And it's so important for our kids to be exposed to a variety of kinds of people, even if we're none of us are perfect parents, but even if we're great parents, just to expose our kids to different kinds of adults and to kids of different ages, that intergenerational aspect you don't necessarily find sometimes in the way we slice school and sports and a lot of activities that are a predefined sort of slice of age group.
Yeah, I think that's part of the beauty of the faith community in that it's designed to offer those intergenerational encounters that are missing in so many other parts of our culture.
So when you work with parents in your congregation, what do you find families need and want from their faith community with respect to parenting styles and parenting challenges today?
I find that a lot of parents think that the church or perhaps even other faith communities should be the main providers of religious education. I see that as not quite what the church is to be, as to we're to partner with parents to be providers of faith education, but also just of experience of life.
Life education.
Yeah, to do life together and to know that one family of a mother and two children or a dad and a child or two parents, they're not alone. And so the faith community exists to enhance that experience.
That's a great point. And in that sort of concept of helping parents advocate for their children and children advocate for themselves, what kind of role can a church or a faith community have in advocating for children and families?
One thing I think is to raise awareness. And so even though everyone may seem that you can trust everyone in your faith community, again, as your statistic shows, we need to be diligent. And by being diligent, we're showing the faith community that we take this seriously. We take your children seriously. We take our lives seriously. So I think that's one step. But also to allow children to realize we're not waiting till they grow up to have a voice. They also have a voice, even when they're a preschooler, to share. And what better person to share that with than somebody in the church who is loving and who's interested in their lives and hopefully will have an impact both ways.
And a lot of the way we develop resilience in our kids and in coping skills is by building on their strengths that they have naturally and helping sort of identify those and helping kids sort of take pride in those and develop those skills. And it seems like a congregation is often a place to be able to recognize sort of individual uniqueness and strengths and give kids a chance to practice some of those coping skills and find pride in that.
It's also a place that probably isn't a place of competition. So on the sports field, though you're interacting with grown-ups, often the goal is to win, or in the orchestra or on the stage, you know, there's still a sense of competition. I'm not naive enough to think there's no competition within a church or in a faith community, but I would hope that the competition isn't the main purpose. You know, winning isn't the main purpose, doing life together in the confines of shared belief and questioning of that belief.
And being able to have some of those real conversations that we might not naturally have in the fast pace of our life, but being willing to step back and sort of talk at a deeper level.
Yeah. Around a table or in a Sunday school room, or but breaking bread together, sharing a meal, which again doesn't happen a whole lot in mm-hmm. our society with intergenerational encounters, so that a child can spend time with a 90-year-old who's not technically a grandparent, but can learn so much from them, and hearing stories and sharing both directions, mm-hmm. I think offers a lot of empowerment for both and a lot of security for both the grown-ups and for the kids.
Great point. If you're just joining us, this is Parenting Today. I'm Sonia Quinones from SCAN of Northern Virginia, along with the Reverend Tricia Manron, and we're talking about how faith-based groups can get involved in prevention efforts. So, Tricia, last April, for Child Abuse Prevention Month, your congregation made prevention a priority. Tell us a little bit about how you decided on that project and what you did.
Yeah, it was an exciting time. We had three groups within our congregation partner together, our community mission group, our outreach, and our faith formations, because we saw this as a collective effort. The easy thing that we did was promote pinwheels, and we had a large banner made declaring that we were partnering with SCAN, and we had a pinwheel parade with our children as part of our Easter egg hunt. And I'll be quite honest, there were some who were concerned that we overlooked Easter in light of pinwheels, but I didn't see it that way. I actually saw it as that we were enhancing the celebration of the resurrection of the one we call the Christ. And so to me, it was an enhancement of our Easter celebration. Throughout the month, we had bits of information in our publications. We also engaged the community. Our particular congregation has a public elementary school directly across the street, and we haven't done a whole lot of partnering with them. But in this particular case, they were willing to plant a pinwheel garden with signs that mentioned even our church. And then we had pinwheel gardens in individuals' homes. So they purchased a pinwheel garden with a sign that mentioned both our church and SCAN.
And we should explain for folks who don't know that the pinwheel is the symbol now of child abuse prevention, and it's intended to be a positive symbol that reflects sort of a carefree childhood and our wishes that every child in our community has access to that safe, stable, nurturing relationships in their yeah. in their home environment.
Part of that month, we also had a intergenerational luncheon where we played some games together, and then we made a quilt with pinwheels and the symbol of our church and different things connected that will eventually become a wall hanging as a symbol of our partnership. As a result of that month, we then offered during our study hour on a Sunday morning, a parenting class, faith-based, but that was in response to all of that. So there would be a continuation in what we were offering, what we were saying is important.
Mm-hmm. And then we also gathered on a Saturday to have a little bit of a training around child sexual abuse in particular, and how all of us can be involved as adults in making sure that our community is a safe one for kids. So as a result of that, were there conversations that happened within your congregation?
Yes, most definitely. We had folks who have worked with children for years, and then some who are kind of new to the scene. It certainly raised awareness, and even though we've had some policies in place, maybe they haven't always been followed. I think there's a lot more diligence even in how rooms are set up, how hallways are open or not open, and realizing that everyone is vulnerable, and abuse is an issue that affects everyone, and how do we play a part in prevention? I think there's more we can always do, but I think we're much more aware of it, even to the point of hiring a new staff person, and part of the requirement was for that person to go through the training.
Mm-hmm. Great. I think your church has been a great role model in how to approach sort of that issue in a proactive way. As we begin to wrap up our conversation this morning, can you put into words why you think it's critical that faith groups and community groups kind of take on this role?
Faith groups ought to be a place where there's safety for children and for the adults, and where conversations can occur openly and freely. If faith communities aren't a place for safety, then I think we failed in our jobs as we seek to offer life and new life to other people. So I think that's essential, something we shouldn't ignore.
Yeah. As we have just about a minute left in our conversation this morning, is there anything else that you wanted to be sure to share with our listeners this morning? Or
I would encourage faith groups to be engaged, to consider how even to encourage in worship, how to participate. There are some things on the website even to help congregations with that, and to know that it is an issue that you can't ignore, and we should all consider our communities, both our faith communities and the community at large, important enough to be engaged.
Absolutely. That that parent-child relationship really is sort of at the core and the fiber of the fabric of our community, and it's great to strengthen that as something that gives life to our community. Faith-based communities have increasingly been promoted as a valuable resource in addressing social needs, especially in the prevention of child abuse. Many faith-based communities nurture core values such as active citizenship, self-reliance, and empowerment, which are vital in the advocacy and support of children and their families. Knowing the facts and signs of child abuse and the struggles behind parenting in today's society are just the first steps in the prevention of child abuse. But drafting a plan, a safety plan, and participating in the efforts of tackling child abuse and raising awareness are a continual and significant effort that needs to take place in all communities, big or small. Every opportunity to respond to a child's need is a chance to protect them from danger and build a stronger connection to their family, church, and their community. This has been Parenting Today. I'm Sonia Quiñones from SCAN of Northern Virginia, and I want to thank the Reverend Tricia Manrin for joining me to talk about how faith-based groups can get involved in supporting parents and protecting children. Remember, every child and family matters. We all play a critical role in our communities, and we can all become involved in the prevention of child abuse. For more information on questions regarding child abuse and prevention, as well as how you can sponsor training at your faith group or community organization, please visit SCAN's website at www.scanva.org.